From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When was Greece last this big in the news? It feels like after Troy. Greek politics riveting the world economy maybe, dangling on the Greek economy, on what Greeks think and do and bear. For a wild time this week, the future of the EU appeared headed for a Greek vote. In the midst of it all, Greeks are scrambling, reeling, looking at a history of too much debt and now painful sacrifice. This hour on Point, we talk with Greeks about their country's moment at the hard center of an economic storm. You can join the conversation. Can you imagine the future Greeks are now facing? The unrelenting sacrifice. What would you do? How would you vote on a path ahead? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Midweek, the Prime Minister, George Papandreou, said Greeks should decide. He said, talking about here about his decision to call a referendum on the big bailout package that Greeks were and are looking at from Europe and the world.
I felt that it was important that the Greek people make a decision on these important developments and the decisions we made in the Council of October 26th. It's their democratic right, and the Greek people, I believe, are mature and wise to make the decision that is to the benefit of the Greek people and the country.
But tumult and controversy all around that push for a referendum, now it's off. Here's two protesters in Athens reflecting on the whole crisis.
I don't think we have dreams for the future in this country. It's real bad for us. It's awful for us.
You don't know what will happen from one time to another, from a moment to another.
We're going to hear from Greeks today. Joining me first from Athens is John Saropoulos, Greece correspondent for National Public Radio. From 2000 to 2009, he was editor-in-chief of the Athens News, Greece's English-language newspaper. You can find a link to his blog at our website, onpointradio.org. John, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So much in motion this week. First of all, on the referendum itself, Papandreou put it forward. Now it's been withdrawn. Why?
Well, it was the issue that was causing his government to crumble. He had three ministers essentially back away from the cabinet and differentiate their position from the government position and say, we cannot support this referendum. Since they are also members of parliament, he couldn't count on their vote in a vote of confidence. And he also had other members of parliament, not in the cabinet, back away from this idea. So really, once he came back from Cannes, where the European reaction was very negative and Greece was roundly humiliated by the French and German positions, his party felt that he had to back away from the idea, and they basically withdrew their support from him.
And what about his government now? Is it standing? It's facing all kinds of challenges, a confidence vote and the rest, depending on when our listeners hear this very conversation. Could he even be out today?
Well, he could be. He did manage to patch the cabinet back together yesterday when he had a meeting with them in the morning. But it wasn't the same story with the parliamentarians. Greece is a parliamentary democracy, unlike the United States, where you have a presidential democracy and the president sends legislation to a Congress, which is made of two chambers. Here, all of that is elided. So the executive and the legislature are essentially one thing because you govern by virtue of your parliament majority. So if you lose that majority of seats, if they withdraw their support, your government falls. It's not like losing Congress. So really, Papandreou had to make sure that his 151 remaining MPs were behind him, and they weren't. And don't forget, he's also shed three MPs who've declared themselves independent in the last 2 weeks.
We're going to hear from more Greeks in just a moment here, but John, point to us, what is it about the bailout package that Greece is now facing, and it's offered to them as a kind of solution for their problems that would keep them in the EU, but it comes with a lot of pain. What's the sort of scale of austerity that would make this such a bitter pill to swallow?
Well, first of all, what's the attraction? The attraction is that Greece gets to remain within the euro. If it defaults and goes back to the drachma, you're going to have massive inflation because the Greek economy is now so valued so low that the value of household savings in Greek banks would effectively be halved. But the value of the Greek debt, which is now 354 billion euros, would double because it's denominated in euros and dollars.
And when you say default to the drachma, you mean leave the eurozone, basically just walk away and go back to their own currency on their own hook.
Yes, this is why remaining within the euro is such a powerful idea. That's why the Prime Minister's idea was to line up the government behind a referendum that would focus on this one issue, because he could then use the overwhelming popular support for remaining within the euro to essentially re-legitimize his administration. That's what has failed this week. He cannot do that anymore. But it may have backfired so badly that, as you say, he loses the vote of confidence tonight, unless he puts a joint coalition government, a national unity government, for a vote of confidence instead of just his own administration. In that case, he could manage to keep the socialists in power as part of a broader coalition, probably, though, not with himself as prime minister.
John Syropoulos, stand by there in Athens. We want to bring some fellow Greeks in here to look at this. This country is up against a lot right now. Now, there are reasons for that, and we'll look at those as well. With us from Athens is Naya Koutsira, a civil servant who handles hiring and these days firing in Greek government ministries. Naya Koutsira, thank you very much for being with us from Athens today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Also with us happens to be in Austin, Texas today is Yiannis Varoufakis. He's a professor of economics at the University of Athens, arrived in the U.S. this week to attend a conference on the euro crisis there in Texas. He's author of The Global Minotaur, The True Causes and Nature of the Current Economic Crisis. Professor Varoufakis, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Yiannis, first to you. I don't think you're so crazy about this bailout. Why not?
Because it's going to prove in the annals of economic history the death knell of the euro system as a whole. And let me begin by contesting something that John said before and which was implied in your intro.
All right.
Greece cannot get out of the euro, even if every Greek citizen, every German citizen, every Italian citizen agrees that Greece should get out of the euro. It is impossible, not only legally, but in terms of public financial engineering, let me put it very, very succinctly. If Greece gets out, and it can, then there will be no euro within the next 48 hours. So
Anywhere in Europe, anywhere in the world. Why? I mean, well, Greece goes for disorderly default. It, in effect, falls back on its own currency, the drachma, and it's out.
Well, let me describe to you the sequence of events. Let's say that this is precisely what the Greek Prime Minister proposes to Parliament on Friday afternoon after the markets close, announcing that Monday and Tuesday will be bank holidays so the new drachmas can be minted, and that the banks will open on Wednesday morning, the ATMs churning out drachmas instead of euros with an automatic conversion of euro accounts into drachmas. Within 10 minutes of that announcement on Friday evening, the ATMs will have run dry in Athens, and within an hour, they will have run dry in Dublin as the Irish start fearing that they may be coming out next. And the reason why people get all their money out is because the precise reason for having a new currency, for going back to your own currency, is to devalue. So by Wednesday morning, they
devalue the debt as well.
To devalue the currency.
Mm-hmm.
The debt will be written off. There will be a total insolvency if that happens. There is no way that you can devalue your currency, create your own currency, and repay the euro-denominated debt. That's part of the purpose of having a new currency.
So are you saying that Greece doesn't have to accept this bailout because Europe can't really force
it? No, I'm not saying
that.
Okay. No, don't put words in my mouth. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that the euro will collapse if Greece comes out. So the threat that Mr. Sarkozy and Mrs. Merkel issued in Cannes to Papandreou that it would be interpreted as a choice by the Greek people to get out of the eurozone was a non-credible threat. Now, I didn't complete the sequence. Once this happens, then the Italian spreads will go through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
France will lose its AAA rating. The FSF, the bailout fund, will need at least 60% of German GDP in order to be backed. So the Germans would have to put up the solvency of Germany as collateral for the rest of the Eurozone. The Germans would not do that. They will create their own currency, and that will happen within 48 hours of a Greek exit. So I think that we should return, you know, to planet Earth, and we should have the debate on what's happening in Greece, and it is indeed a huge mess on a rational foundation.
We'll look at that. I mean, you're describing this almost as though Greece is in the driver's seat here. We'll come back and look at that. Naya, give us just a sense of how much, I don't know, already fear and pain people are feeling right there in Athens where you are already in the months that have gone by, Naya. This has been a real trial for the Greeks.
Well, I speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great sacrifice we are into. For the last 2 years, my household lost 60% of the income, and we're still counting down.
Mm.
The problem is that we can't see the clear sky. We sacrifice so many things, and still we can't see what is going to happen next. And this is awful.
Is your situation unusual in losing 60% of its income, or have many people faced that?
At all. It's very usual, and fortunately, my husband and I, we don't have any loans. Most Greeks have loans here and there, as everywhere in the world.
Sure. And if you lose 60% of your income, that puts you in a lot of trouble.
Exactly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with Greeks about the mess on their hands, the Greek dilemma, the fate of their country, the fate of Europe, and maybe more, all tied up here. Naya Kotsira joins us from Athens, a civil servant there. She handles hiring and firing in the Greek government, in its ministries. There's been a lot of firing lately. John Sarapoulos is with us from Athens as well. He's Greece correspondent for National Public Radio, longtime editor-in-chief there of the Athens News. And with us from the University of Athens, today in Austin, Texas, Professor of Economics Yannis Varoufakis joins us, author of The Global Minotaur, The True Causes and Nature of the Current Economic Crisis. It's been a long, tough road already since word came out that there was a lot more debt than Greeks had been honest about. Everything came down on this country. Here's Greek protesters clashing with police in mid-October. There have been many such days in Greece. Here's the Greek foreign minister talking with the BBC in October about the necessity of austerity measures.
The vast majority of the Greek people who are not happy, and some of whom are in fact in the streets today, understand that these measures, as terribly difficult as they are necessary and will guarantee a better future for themselves and their family.
All right, so there we are, Greece really in the grip of things. John Sarapoulos, take us back to the, I don't know what you call the beginning here, but what built this trial for the Greeks? What is the background that put them in this terrible spot right now, John?
Well, I think there are some strategic errors that took place over the two-year period of the crisis, but there are also, to be fair to the government, systemic problems. The strategic errors, I think, were, first of all, Papandreou told the Greeks before he was elected in October of 9 that the situation was not as grim as the government, then conservative, was making it appear. Once he came to power, he went to the Eurogroup and told them that the deficit was going to be 13.5%, more than double what Greece had estimated in the middle of the year before the summer,
yeah,
which infuriated them because it made the previous government appear to be lying, and that made the country look bad as a whole. And after this bombshell broke, he proceeded not to form a convincing austerity package or to implement the austerity package he was given by the Europeans. So there were lots of errors that led to the point where Greece has now lost all credibility. But in fairness to him, there are also enormous problems. The party system here in Greece has effectively spent much of its career over the last 3.5 decades buying block votes from the unions by handing them concessions before election time, or promising them concessions if they're in the opposition and fulfilling them when they come to power. And the unions have effectively sued for more benefits for their members in the public sector particularly, and they have sued for more hires where they weren't needed, and they have also really tried to arrange for political protection for their employees when there was pressure for layoffs. So no austerity could reasonably be achieved. We've seen in the last 10 years alone reform efforts in education, in social security, defeated by the powers that support the status quo, namely organized labor in alliance with the party system. It's a completely evil situation that had to come down at some point, and it came down at the worst possible moment when the entire world was in financial crisis.
John, Naya was beginning to describe the kind of pain that her own family and household has faced. We'll look at the big issues with Yanis and Naya and you, but take us down to the household level, to the family level. What have you observed in your personal life about how this impasse, this rough patch, has affected Greek citizens, Greek families?
Well, I've observed that the government's way of lowering pay packages horizontally across the board in the public sector has been deeply unfair. Because if you go into a public hospital, if you go to an outpatient clinic, you'll see doctors who are working 19-hour shifts, not seeing their children, who are having their bonuses slashed and their pay slashed in the same manner in which people who've never shown up to work in the public sector but enjoy a salary for staying away also have had their salaries cut. And that has been my first observation, that the Prime Minister should have made a qualitative decision rather than a quantitative one, so that people who are actually honestly doing their jobs in the public sector, and there are plenty of those, are not punished for other people's mistakes.
Yanis, I want to ask you about the big dynamics of what's happening here, but make it real to us first, the kind of pain that Greek families are feeling right now. What have you observed in your neighborhood, your community, your family, Yanis?
I won't talk about my family because there are families that are suffering a lot more than we do. Let me give you an example. The other day I was paying my electricity bill. Mm-hmm. It was late, so I had to go and pay it myself, not via web banking. So there was this lady in front of me around mid-70s, and she was queuing up not to pay her bill, but to request that her electricity supply is discontinued. So I asked her why while we were waiting, and she said that, look, my pension is 650 euros. My rent plus water bills come up to about 580. And then the question is, what do I do with the rest? Do I go to the supermarket and stock up on some very cheap basic foodstuffs, or do I pay for the electricity? So I opt for the former, and I shall live with candles and with a makeshift stove in my flat in Athens. So this is personal, but allow me to just come in on the broader issues. Why has this happened? Let me put it very briefly. Greece was always teetering on the verge of the debt crisis. It has been doing this for the last 150 years, but it has always managed to get out of it through devaluation, through some kind of stagflation like in the 70s and so on.
Devaluation when they had their own currency.
That's right. Now what is happening is we're part of a Eurozone, a common currency area, which was never designed to sustain a global financial shock like that of 2008. When the shock of 2008 happened, it started in Wall Street and then migrating across the Atlantic, hitting the banks of Europe, then going to Dubai, hitting the sovereign debt sector there, and then eventually coming to Greece. Well, it effectively happened was the euro system began to crumble. It was going to crumble even if Greece never existed on the map of the eurozone. If it wasn't from Greece, it would have started somewhere else. And there were deep structural flaws in the way that the eurozone was designed, and it was always going to unravel. It so happened that Greece was the canary in the mine. It was the snowflake that started the avalanche, but you cannot really blame a snowflake for an avalanche. The real reasons have to be found in the way that the banking sector, the public sector debt, and the whole gamut of European Eurozone institutions were designed. They were never designed for a crisis.
We'll look at that. We've got callers and with questions for all of you. Let me go to them, if I may. Rachel in Westwood, Massachusetts. Rachel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, it's a Greek tragedy, no pun intended, but I find it very difficult to feel sympathy. And I think it's proof positive that socialism doesn't work. Social programs and entitlement programs are going to break the back, and it will happen in America. So it's a good lesson to learn.
And you don't feel sympathy because why, Rachel?
Because I feel that they were dishonest about their debt, and they continued to borrow, and they knew they couldn't afford all of these social programs, but yet they continued with them.
Rachel, I appreciate your call. Naya Kotsira, what do you say to that perspective? No sympathy there from Rachel because, you know, the Greeks were going deep into debt. They weren't honest with themselves. They weren't honest with the world. And she doesn't want to feel sorry for Greeks now.
Well, what I feel as a citizen, first of all, is that I didn't know. Okay, so the Greeks did not know. The government never told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one thing. The second I have to say is that, of course, we have a big, big analogy of responsibilities, but I can never believe as a person that somehow the Greek politicians are more intelligent than our European politicians. What I want to say is that I can never believe that our European partners didn't know. This what happens now that, yes, we deceived the whole Europe. I really cannot believe it. I mean, I tell you a fact. In 2004, when the Conservative Party got in power, the Ministry of Economics then, Mr. Alogos Koufis, went to European Union and revealed that we had double books.
Yep.
From that moment on, and that we never reached a 3% deficit, that it was implicit for our Maastricht Treaty.
Okay.
Now, from there on, Greece was in surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
What happened 8 years later?
So you're kind of thinking that the Europeans were complicit during all those years, though they expressed shock when the word of the double books came out. Let us hold there for a moment and get another call right here. Christopher in New Haven, Connecticut. Christopher, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I heard early on in this very complex crisis that part of the problem was that many Greeks did not pay the full tax that they owed. And I just would like to know what percent of the problem is attributable, or the budget deficit is attributable, to people not paying the kind of taxes that are owed.
John, let me put that to you. I've got lots of questions on that line, on line two here. You know, ask about the widely held belief that Greeks are the worst tax cheats in the world. Is that part of the problem here, John?
I think it's not an entirely fair picture. I think that there is a problem with law enforcement in Greece in general, not just in taxes. And most of the urban middle class here, if you were to ask people on the street, would say, we wish we lived in a better administered country where there was the palpable feeling of equality before the law and that the law weren't applied selectively. But let me also tell you some figures the finance minister revealed in Parliament a few weeks ago in conversation with one of the leaders of the opposition parties. He said that now that the banking transactions have been declassified, he was able to know that in 2009, 5.4 billion euros were remitted abroad from Greek bank accounts by 180,000 people. But almost all of that money, almost 5 billion of that money, was remitted by a mere 8,500 people. And of those, 4,000 people declared an income of less than 20,000 euros. In Greece.
So you're talking wealthy Greeks or secretly wealthy Greeks planting money abroad, you're saying?
My point is precisely that a lot of the tax evasion, perhaps a disproportionate amount, is from the wealthier rather than the middle class.
We've got criticism here, but also sympathy. Diogenes with his lantern writes online, if a tiny country like Greece can bring down the global economic firmament, can the root of the problem really be venality, patronage, jobs, and tax evasion? Not to shirk blame, but we must look honestly at the problem if we're to fix it. He says, physician, heal thyself. Let's go to San Francisco, California. Dean is calling. Hi, Dean, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to comment on a caller a couple of minutes ago who said that this was basically proof that social programs or social safety net programs don't work. I think it's interesting that it at exactly the opposite end of Europe in terms of economic success is Germany, that has a much more robust social safety net than we do in the United States.
Or in Greece, certainly, yeah.
I think it doesn't actually say you can't do that. It may well say something about how you structure it and that it has to be focused on getting people back into economic productivity. But, you know, Germany has a great social safety net. It has a great welfare program. It has universal health care. So it's clearly affordable because Germany is the economic engine of Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. Dean, let us take it to our economist, Yanis Varoufakis. How about it? You've got there Germany in Europe with big social welfare programs and a very successful economy. Greece, much smaller social welfare programs, but a bust of an economy right now. Walk us through that difference. You say Greece has always been teetering on this. Why does one nation, Germany, have the picture we see and Greece have such a different one?
Because Germany is heavily industrialized and has a very technologically based, very, very efficient manufacturing industry. That's the main reason. But I'd like to address Rachel when she said that she doesn't feel sympathy for the Greeks. That's fine. I can wear that. But let me tell Rachel this, that I've spent a number of decades trying to convince my compatriots in Greece that to generalize about Americans is a great mistake. To try to, for instance, blame the average American on Main Street for the shenanigans of Wall Street is a catastrophic error of not just ethics, but also of rationality. And generally speaking, generalization is the beginning of racism. So, Rachel, let me tell you something that you probably don't know. Amongst Europeans, Greeks have the highest poverty rate, and they had that before the crisis started. So there is no such thing as the Greeks. There are different kinds of Greeks. There are the Greeks that struggled to make ends meet, who worked two jobs for a pittance, who were always left behind by the failures of the Greek social welfare system. And there were the Greeks that benefited, just like, you know, the Wall Street golden boys and girls were benefiting during the fat cows era prior to 2008. And what has happened is the systemic problems of the Eurozone suddenly appeared, and they appeared at the weakest link of the chain, and that was Greece. And then when the chickens came home to roost, and the debt crisis exploded, and the government started struggling to rake taxes in, who do you think was asked to pay the bill? Not the ones who benefited from the profligacy of the pre-crisis era. They had their money stashed away in Swiss and German bank accounts. No, they were the ones who were suffering prior to 2008, 2009, trying to make ends meet then and struggling to survive today. So have no sympathy for them. But then, you know, bear the lessons of 1929. A great debt crisis leads, firstly, to the collapse of a common currency. It's the Eurozone now, the Euro. It was a gold standard then. And secondly, everybody starts blaming everybody else. And one people turns against another. And very soon, people start turning against each other. So please bear in mind that simple lesson of history.
We've got lots of reaction online. Rob says, it seems to me that the issue before the Greeks represents a pressing matter a lot of Western democracies will face soon, which is a tendency to vote themselves financial benefits that they cannot afford. On the other hand, Peg says, I always have problems when I hear about Greece living beyond its means or mismanaging its budget. I doubt very much, she writes, whether the average Greek storekeeper, clerk, or carpenter has been living that high on the hog for the last 20 or 30 years. Points on both sides there, and a lot of insight today from our Greek guests from across the pond. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour with Greeks about living through the epic Greek debt mess that is upon their nation and the world right now. Yanis Varoufakis joins us, professor of economics, University of Athens, author of The Global Minotaur. Naya Kotsira joins us from Athens, civil servant there. John Soropoulos joins us from Athens as well, Greek correspondent for National Public Radio. In just a moment, we'll hear from an American economist looking out on this whole picture. A couple of callers first, Martin in Lexington, Massachusetts. Martin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I read The Economist and have for years, and a simple glance at the table in the back shows that Greece ran a significant, in the range of 10%, balance of payments deficit forever. And I think your caller's point there about nobody was paying any attention, the other Europeans and so forth, traditionally they would have devalued their currency. Mm-hmm. This would have made them more competitive. People would have come and bought vacation homes, etc. But the euro doesn't permit that, and this was just head in the sand. How can you run? I mean, the U.S. is criticized for balance of payments, which are, you know, 3%, and so this is it was just unsustainable, and nobody cared.
So are you sympathetic to the Greeks' plight then, or are you saying they made their own bed, and now here we go?
I say they made their own bed. The German banks were loaning them money, and they were buying Mercedes-Benz and Audis and so forth, the wealthy among them. And so I am not sympathetic. This is they have economy that wasn't competitive. I've heard figures like 25% or 30% of the people work for the government. So I cannot be sympathetic.
Martin, I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here. Parkland, Florida. Andrew, you're on the air, Andrew.
Hi, I have a couple of points I'll make real quick. Number one, the idea that this is analogous to Wall Street is completely untrue, because in Greece it was the government. We get the government we deserve, and if you have a system that is set up by the people, for the people, that allows the people to have their head in the sand, you get what you deserve. Number two, you have a system where you have everybody basically feeding off the same teat as everyone else, rather than being a little bit more entrepreneurial. Everybody's a taker, 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 and you know, where are the people out there who are saying to themselves, you know what, I want to go out and do this on my own?
Hey, Andrew, let me ask you something, Andrew, if I may. Here's a comment online from Greg, and he says, given the debt that we owe the ancient Greeks, perhaps we could spare something to help out their descendants. After all, you know, what are the royalties on Greek philosophy, religion, science, math, literature, government, I guess democracy? What about it, Andrew? You ready to bail them out on the basis of all that was handed down to us?
No, I'm not ready to bail them out, but I would certainly encourage them to figure out a way to be a little bit more self-sufficient individually. You know, you have the lady there who said, we didn't know. Well, you know what? It's your government. It's your job to know.
Andrew, we've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate your call in Parkland. Nashville, one more. Jack, you're on the air, Jack.
You know, you can't have a drug addict without a drug dealer. And banks who were giving loans to the Greek government, knowing that they didn't have the wherewithal to pay the bill, should be held accountable. In case you didn't know this, a large firm called MEF Financial went bankrupt this week, in part because they were fraudulently using their clients' money to bet on sovereign debt, such as Greek debt. So the idea that it's all the fault of the average guy on the street in Greece is complete and utter nonsense. This is exactly analogous to Wall Street, because it was Wall Street and their peers around the world who were continuing to loan money to a government that had no business borrowing additional money.
Jack, we've got it, and there's your full range, whether it's on Greece or on Wall Street right here. Yanis Naya, John, stand by for just a moment. Vivian Ann Schmidt joins us right now from Boston, professor of European integration at Boston University. She's the director of the Center for International Relations there, director for the Center for the Study of Europe, author of Democracy in Europe. Vivian Ann Schmidt, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
You hear our American listeners listening to our Greek guests today and looking out on the news out of Greece, and this big range of, you know, perspectives and sympathies and anti-sympathies here toward the Greeks. How do you look at the mess that Greece is in right now, and where, I don't know, where the root of it lies?
Yeah, well, basically, this is not an isolated issue. It's clear that Greece was enabled, as one of the callers asked about, and there was a response to that. It was not held to task by the European Commission in 2004. These were other member states said, no, we don't want any investigation of Greece's books, because then this leaves the way open for everyone else to have their books looked at.
Yep.
One of the previous callers said something that I think is very important. Think about it this way. If the Greeks were drunkards on a binge, the French and German bankers were the bartenders. So it's a lot more than Greece, although Greece is certainly responsible, whether we want to talk about cheating, lying, lack of administrative capacity now to solve the problem, lack of political will. But in terms of the crisis itself, it never needed to have happened.
What about now? Here we are, and the Prime Minister this week briefly floated the idea of a referendum. If you were Greek, Vivian, would you vote to go along with the bailout program that the EU is offering with all of its many years of austerity that would come down the road, or not?
You know, Greece is between a rock and a hard place. If I were to vote no, if the Greeks were to vote no in a referendum and leave the euro, it would be a major disaster, as one of your panelists suggested. Even the whiff of printing drachmas, you have a run on the bank, and not only Greece goes down, but the rest of the eurozone goes down.
But if they, on the other hand, go with the bailout, what are they in for? What's their next decade look like?
It's a disaster. They can't devalue their currency, and you know, usually the IMF regime would have an orderly negotiated default with the creditors. You devalue the currency, have a short, sharp austerity, and you're out of it within 2 or 3 years. This is not possible. So what Greece will end up needing to do, the Greek government officials, if on the current bailout, they need to devalue salaries. And this means long, deep austerity, and it's really politically unsustainable.
Naya was telling us she's already seen a 60% loss in her household income. I mean, how much deeper can it go?
No, exactly. Part of the problem is the program that the Troika has imposed on Greeks. It's a severe austerity program that has already backfired. It can produce no growth because you've got across-the-board cuts. There's no money for business and job creation, no training, money for training or education. Government spending's going down. So all of the predictions by the economists is it's going to be at least 10 years of austerity, and then Greece is back to the same place it was before in terms of its debt.
Vivian, let me get a call, question for you from Aaron in Framingham, Massachusetts. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling with a question for the guests because I would like to know how they feel about America's likelihood to fall into the same, sort of tragedy that Greece is in right now. We've had all these other callers saying that they feel no sympathy. Well, are they not looking around in their own landscape right now, seeing how close to the precipice of this that America is sitting on? We have all these people with money on Wall Street, and they're gambling with our lives as the middle-class American, and we have very little control in it. I have all the sympathy in the world for the middle and lower class in Greece who had no control over where their country was steered by those in power.
Aaron, let us pick it up. Vivian, what about the U.S.? I mean, people look at Greece, and you look at any country this happens, and, you know, you worry, you wonder, could it happen here? Is it an entirely different situation, or do you see parallels? Should Americans look at Greece and fear, my gosh, that could be us, or are we in a different circumstance?
You know, you can't talk about Greece and America being in separate places because this is a global economy. So that if Greece blows, the Eurozone blows, America blows up. It's as simple as that. Because of the interdependence of the banks, because there are credit default swaps on Greek debt.
But I think what our callers are really looking at is American debt and whether or not we have debt on such a scale and are in a circumstance like Greece that we could go down our own debt rabbit hole. Now, we got the dollar. We're not in the euro. Are we immune then? Are we in fundamentally different circumstance?
I think no one is immune. But this is really a crisis of credibility. Part of the problem for the eurozone is that it didn't respond credibly to the crisis. Back in January or February 2010, what the Eurozone leaders needed to do is either say that Greece needs to go to the IMF or provide a credible package. What happened was they dithered, in particular Germany delayed, and the result was that by May, the markets were very worried. Clearly, what America has to make sure to do is not also get the markets worried. But what's going to if there were a Eurozone blow up, the U.S. would be next, regardless of where the U.S. is, or possibly because of where the U.S. is in terms of its debt and its deficit. But the U.S. is also engaged in other kinds of policies. Part of the problem for the Eurozone and for Europe more generally is they've all agreed to engage in austerity all at the same time. That's a disaster. That means you're not going to get growth. The markets aren't stupid. They're as worried about growth as they are worried about deficits.
So if you try an austerity, try an austerity your way out of it, that has problems of its own. Vivian Ann Schmidt, Director of the Center for the Study of Europe at Boston University, it's very good of you to join us for a few minutes today. We're grateful. Thank you, Vivian.
Thank you.
Yanis Varoufakis, okay, you're not going to have the referendum, it looks like. But if you were, would you vote for accepting the EU package, the bailout, or not, sir?
I would vote resoundingly no, but let me explain this. You're presenting me here as a Greek economist, which of course I am, but I'm making a considered effort to think as a European, because for me, the trials and tribulations of the average Greek are not more significant than those of the hard-working German worker whose living standards have been slipping for the last 10 years, for the Irishman or woman who has to live in negative equity, for the Spaniards who are suffering immensely from a similar crisis, from the French, for the French, you know, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
This is a European crisis. So my no to this particular agreement, the Brussels Agreement, comes from a verdict regarding the capacity of that package, which, remember, is not a package for Greece. It is meant as a package for stopping in its tracks the euro crisis in its entirety.
Mm.
As such, it fails on all counts. It is a non-agreement, really. What our European leaders did was to lock themselves in chambers for 2 or 3 days and nights. They didn't reach any significant rational agreement on what to do with it. So they decided in an Orwellian twist of amazing magnitude to relabel their disagreement an agreement, effectively to state what they want to do, to identify the three areas that they wanted to deal with, the banking sector, the Greek debt, the overall public sector debt, especially Italy and Spain and so on and so forth, and then to fill in the gaps with inanities and with numbers that they plucked out of thin air. This package will not work. Anyone who looks at it carefully will realize that it will be just like the July package, the March of 2011 package, that is, packages that do not offer anything either to the markets or to the electorates.
And what would it mean for Greeks, Yanis?
Forget Greeks. Greeks are...
We're not forgetting Greeks them. We're here to talk about them.
Well, you see, this is a mistake, because I'm insisting. This is a catastrophe for Europe. Greeks were suffering more than anybody else for reasons that have to do with their own profligacy in the past and so on and so forth. But if Europe comes down, it will be the third time in 100 years that the global environment it deteriorates so terribly as a result of errors committed on the European continent.
Let me take it to Naya Kutz here, if I may. Naya, if you had the referendum, if you had the vote, would you vote for the bailout package EU is offering for you and, as Yanis says, for all of Europe in a way? Would you vote for it or not?
First of all, before answering this, just a few words. I would like to say that me as a citizen and as a middle-class person, I am totally for European Union. And this is something that all Greeks feel. Mm-hmm. They are totally for European Union. They feel like the family of European Union. Mm-hmm. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because we do, as citizens of at least middle class or lower class, know the problems of our administration. Now, joining a big family and a very well administrated countries like Germany or Holland or France or whatever, we've always felt that we are in safe paradise, that they would bring everything good they have here. So this is one thing.
But here we are, and it's not so good. It's not so beautiful at the moment.
Exactly. Now this is I just want to put the sentiment, the feeling of the Greeks to the European Union. Now about the referendum. First of all, I want to divide the two questions. One question is, would you vote for the bailout? Mm-hmm. And it's another question if you go out of the euro. Now, for the bailout, I will definitely vote no. And I tell you why. I am part of this country, and I know that I have to sacrifice still a lot of things
to get everything in gear. However, this agreement tells us that in 10 years from now, in 2020, the debt ratio to the GDP is going to be 120% as planned. Mm-hmm. Basically, what do they tell me? I'm going to be in the situation when the whole crisis started. So,
you step up now, accept the bailout, and 10 years from now, you feel like you've made no progress. So there you are, over that barrel. Don't want to leave the EU, but also don't want the bailout the EU is offering now.
Exactly. What I want, is that they give me, as a country, a little bit of time. The economy is dead over here. There's absolutely no liquidity. Not at all. So this way, economy does not develop. Not at all. It's a recession, and the recession is a spiral situation. And this is reflected to the ratio they tell me they're going to have in 2020 of the debt.
A decade from now. And listeners, with that, you get the flavor of exactly what Greece is up against. Naya Kotsira, John Saropoulos, Yannis Varoufakis, thanks to all three of you for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.